Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Is it too soon to start talking rebuilding of the herd? No, I don't think it is too soon to talk about rebuilding of the herd.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago on the hills of a cattle on feed report.
I think one of the data points that came out kind of showed that the cows, the heifers, I should say, on feed as a percent of total cattle on feed had dipped a bit. So it kind of seems like they are holding on to them in order to rebuild the herd. At least that's what that little dip would suggest when the heifers come down a little bit like that as a percent of the total cattle on feed. So I don't think it's too soon. I think that, you know, there might be a data point there that's actually kind of proven that. But again, it's a longer term trend. So we'll see what happens over the next few months to see if that's something that's really happening in the marketplace.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Typically, February sees a dip relative to the placements numbers in January.
Bob Mowers with Manduka Trading in Chicago on USDA's latest cattle on feed report.
And March typically sees a bit of a move to the upside relative to the numbers in February. So down, up. Okay. And if you look at what's happened this year, it's up, down. It's complete opposite. So it seems like the market doesn't have a complete handle on exactly what's going on out there in the cattle land. And we'll just have to see how this plays out and see if we get into more of a normal scenario. So just to kind of finish that thought, so you know, you would also expect next month to be lower than typically, right? There's always going to be some kind of aberration over decades of looking at this data. But typically you would expect April to be a little bit lower. You know, the numbers pumped out for next month, for this month, to be lower than this month. So another push to the downside. Hopefully that's not confusing. So anyway, when Mark is trying to figure out what to do, and clearly you can tell that it was surprised with the big move that we saw today. I already mentioned the moves that they had and the prices, and it's going to be whether or not it's got staying power. I would think that there is the possibility, but I think one caveat is one of the nuances in the data that you can kind of extrapolate is the heavier weight cattle on feed, you know, and of late it's been on the heavier side. So what I'm talking about is the cattle on feed over 120 days. And that is sitting at about, somewhere between 4.9 and 5 million head, which is pretty significant. Normally we'd start to see some kind of tailing off of that number in the near term. And we'll need to see the market kind of eat its way literally and figuratively through that number. So we'll see how things kind of evolve with that. But I guess that would be the one thing that kind of is a caveat for me, being that the market had a good little push to the upside today, is, you know, when are those going to come to market and how heavy are they going to be? And, you know, obviously that's going to be supply that we have to contend with. Now we are coming into the time of the year, slowly it seems like, but coming into the time of the year where barbecue demand tends to have an uptick. So hopefully that'll help out the market. And if there's any kind of push to the downside from that number that I mentioned, then perhaps it'll be not as bad if we can hit it around the same time as the demand kicks in for the summer grilling season. Cash, a little bit weaker. I wouldn't say it was like extraordinarily weaker. Live fed steer price last week on average, preliminary data, about a buck lower than the previous week. Steer price is down about $5. That's a 600 to 700 pound category. Cutouts, and then most of the primals were also lower week on week. So we'll have to see what happens with the cash side of the equation. I don't know if I'm really expecting much cash to be trading in the near term, meaning today, tomorrow, Wednesday. I think maybe it'll be a later week, later in the week endeavor. We'll see how that comes together. Other stories that are kind of affecting the market right now is the confirmed cow-to-cow transmission and the spread of that bird flu virus in dairy herds. We'll see if that does something to support, meaning take it away. We'll see how that goes. And also, the USDA confirmed that the virus was detected in dairy cattle in, I think, up to about 8 states now, and that it's still spreading. So, again, something to keep an eye out. It could be a variable in the marketplace. And slaughter last week was not too bad. I think I mentioned that, you know, up about 17,000 head week on week. So at least the packers appear to be willing to keep that throughput going at a pretty good pace, which is good for the market overall. So got the data from Friday, and now the market's had a day to kind of absorb it. Again, I think it's going to be important to see if we can sustain these gains.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
This evening, I'm taking the opportunity to discuss how farmers, ranchers, foresters, and consumers deserve certainty.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson.
Agriculture remains the backbone of America, but our nation's dedicated producers have been burdened with fractured supply chains, considerable input costs, relentless inflation, natural disasters, volatile markets, and labor shortages. Each is consistently worsened by ill-conceived, half-baked executive action by unelected bureaucrats in Washington. Our nation's farmers are bearing the brunt of it, and adding insult to injury, we're now a net importer facing the most significant decline in farm income in our history. Farmers impact our everyday lives, so how do we support those who provide so much to our families, to our nation, and to our world? The answer is a five-year farm bill.
Tracy Mann is a representative from southwestern Kansas, member of the House Ag Committee.
I rise to call on this Congress to pass a comprehensive five-year farm bill. This is my 25th time to come to the House floor to address the importance of a five-year farm bill that is long enough to provide certainty and short enough to respond to the market changes and strengthen the safety net. America's farmers, ranchers, and agriculture producers deserve it. America's food and national security depend on it, and this Congress must deliver it. In the almost 5.5 years since the last Farm Bill was signed into law, the world has drastically changed. Since 2018, we've experienced a global pandemic, seen a war unfold between Russia and Ukraine, and now Israel and Hamas, and witnessed President Biden's failed trade agenda cause market fluctuations that no one could have imagined. Top of that, President Biden's spending spree and senseless war on American energy has driven inflation to historic levels. No matter how many times administration officials and political pundits say that input costs and inflation rates are coming down, our ag producers know that these levels are still sky high in comparison to the last farm bill in 2018. As Congress considers these conditions, we must also anticipate future market fluctuation as best we can. That is why my priorities for the farm bill are to strengthen and protect crop insurance, incentivize agriculture trade, and conduct rigorous oversight. Last year's drought and market conditions caused producers in Kansas to abandon the highest number of acres of wheat since World War I, and I witnessed a 35% decrease in annual wheat per harvested acre in my district. A good crop insurance program and strong safety net help ag producers in situations like these and help producers reliably stock our grocery store shelves, maintain a robust food supply, and keep people fed. It's one of our nation's best examples of a public-private partnership, and Congress must use a scalpel and not a sledgehammer when ensuring its continued success for generations to come. Ag trade promotion helps America's remain competitive and secure as well. Back in February, I introduced legislation that would allocate additional resources to trade promotion programs in this farm bill. Between 1977 and 2019, these trade programs added 13.7% of additional export revenue to the value of U.S. ag products and helped to create more than 500,000 American jobs. It is no secret that perhaps more than any other profession, ag producers face endless hurdles as they work tirelessly to raise our livestock, grow our food, and put fuel in our cars. This next farm bill must not handicap them with additional overly restrictive regulation. Instead, Congress must get out of their way and support them with the tools they need to protect the future of American food and agriculture. If you think about a safety net, the higher the risk, the higher the fall, and the stronger the safety net that you need to survive. The livelihoods of American producers and consumers are on the line right now, and that means our food security and national security are on the line as well. American farmers, ranchers, and agriculture producers need certainty like never before, and Congress must deliver for them with a five-year farm bill.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The Senate Finance Committee and House Ways and Means Committee held annual hearings this week regarding the president's trade agenda. Dave Salmonson, American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Government Affairs Director, says it's an opportunity for the administration and Congress to collaborate.
This is a required report in which the administration lays out what their accomplishments have been and what they plan on doing in the upcoming year. And this year, you had the U.S. Trade Representative, Ambassador Catherine Tai, came before the committees and laid out their ideas on trade for the year. So it provides an opportunity for some real interaction between the administration and the Congress on trade and the trade agenda going forward.
Salmonson says there was bipartisan concern that the administration isn't doing enough to improve trade.
A lot of discussion was about the fact that this administration does not pursue the traditional trade agreements. There was a lot of discussion about the fact that ag exports aren't keeping up with the volume and dollar value of ag imports, and also the lack of enforcement, especially in bringing trade cases with China. So there was an awful lot of, let us say, suggestions for improvement.
Salmonson says AFBF seeks more effort from the administration on trade.
We're not having the growth that we were used to having, going backwards some. We're not expanding our markets in a way that we want to. We need to diversify. More than half of our ag exports only go to 5 regions. We would like to sell more to a greater variety of countries, but unless we have an administration that's really willing to get in there and negotiate trade agreements and lower barriers that other countries have, we just really can't use that approach to grow our exports.
Learn more at FB.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
My staff keeps track of how many trips I take. Last year, I think it was 53 and 5 international trips. So I would anticipate that there'll probably be even a greater number of trips domestically because there is a lot to talk about. You know, we're in the process of trying to get a farm bill through the Congress. And that's going to have an impact on trades, going to have an impact on farms. We're trying to create a better understanding of this issue of the number of farms we've lost and the farmland we've lost over the course of the last 40 years, because we put so much focus on production and not as much focus on the profitability side, particularly for small and mid-sized producers. And that's one of the reasons why when we did this trade promotion opportunity with the CCC I mentioned earlier, we decided to identify about $100 million of that resource and shift it into a specific program for specialty crop producers and to allow them to get more engaged and more aggressive in the trade area. We think there's tremendous opportunity for what we grow and what we raise in terms of specialty crops, fruits and vegetables that the rest of the world would like to have and should have. So I'm excited about that opportunity, and that may lead to a chance to visit. When we reopened the market in Mexico for sour potatoes, well, that was something that hadn't been done for 15 years. When we convinced Japan and convinced other countries to take a look at renewable energy and renewable fuels, opening up new opportunities for ethanol. That's a big deal. Tariffs being reduced in some of the smaller countries that open up terrific opportunities for our specialty crops. So these singles and doubles don't get necessarily the headlines, but for the family farmer who is dependent on a strong, stable market, and when 30% of what we grow and raise can in any one year be exported to the rest of the world, it's a big deal. And it is also an opportunity, I think, to reinforce sort of the American brand of excellence, of safety, of innovation. And so having a partner at USTR really makes my job a lot easier. And I really appreciate that we have such a strong partnership.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
First of all, I think it's always important to recognize how significant agricultural trade has been in the last couple of years.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack talking trade with U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai.
Records have been set over the last 3 years, so certainly 2023 was a record-setting year. But for me, I think what was important is a new opportunity that we created as a result of a creative use of the Commodity Credit Corporation resources. We've established a regional agricultural promotion program, and it's really designed to focus on maybe some of the second-tier ag market opportunities. You know, we know we do a lot of trade with China, with Mexico, with Canada, where is the other opportunity? How do we diversify? As you well know, you've traveled and you talked to the many, many countries. Tremendous opportunity in Southeast Asia, tremendous opportunity in other parts of the world. So establishing this billion-dollar commitment to provide resources to expand promotion, expand presence, expand opportunities in these second and third tier countries, I think would probably be the most important thing that happened in 2023 from our perspective in terms of ag trade.
For 2023, I'm really also proud of the work that you and I have done together, our teams have done together, on diversifying the way that we do trade, looking for strategic opportunities to open markets. India, for example, building on a traditionally quite difficult relationship with India and finding motivation so that over the course of 2023, we won more market access into India and the lowering of tariffs for a whole bunch of different kinds of nuts, walnuts, pecans, almonds, for turkey and for duck. for cranberries, for blueberries. And each one of these is a good story. It is about sharing with the rest of the world the bounty that our incredibly hardworking and savvy farmers produce, and also diversifying our relationships with the markets around the world.
Well, you not only travel around the world, you also travel, as you mentioned, around the country. And I know that you've done that because I was recently in Colorado. And the folks with the Bison Association came up to me and were very proud to display a picture of you among the bison, which I thought was quite brave of the trade representative to do that. You looked pretty comfortable around those critters, and good for you for doing it.
Our consumers are in such a strong position that they have spent more on agricultural products, including on imports. And then also because of the strength of the U.S. economy, the strength of the U.S. dollar, that that has impacted the balance in terms of imports and exports. Is that also what you're seeing? Because you were much, much closer to the dynamic.
Absolutely. I mean, a stronger U.S. economy generates a lot of activity and a lot of opportunity for our consumers. Unemployment rate at a historic low, unemployment below 4% for an extended period of time. We haven't seen this for 50 years. Real wages coming up, which allows families to have just a bit more in the pocket. Grocery prices now beginning to come down. The inflation rate very consistent with pre-pandemic levels for many of the grocery items. So that gives folks the ability to be a bit more aggressive, if you will, in the grocery store and more choices. And that's one of the aspects of trade that I think sometimes people don't fully appreciate. When you've got choice, there's competition. When you have competition, you usually have a better shake for the consumer. So that's important. And you mentioned a record year. You know, that wasn't just an outlier. The fact is the last 3 years have been record years for ag exports and, in fact, have also been a record year for net cash farm income.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Really, no major surprises there, at least in Nebraska.
Elliot Dennis, Livestock Economist, University of Nebraska, Lincoln. Looking back at USDA's cattle on feed.
We are about 100% of where we were at in the past. When we're thinking about kind of where we're at, kind of moving forward, we're showing a lot more heifers on feed here in Nebraska, about 10 to 15,000 more, same number of steers. And I think that just continues to indicate that as long as we're continuing to place more heifers, that there's not a strong desire to continue to retain those and at least have a serious aggression to rebuild the herd. We have seen some changes in the weights that, at least in Nebraska, what we've seen is a little bit more on the middle weights, heavier weights. We kind of shied away from a little bit down 3 or 4%. And so for us, we're thinking about where those cattle are going to come out at and where their weights are at. Just lines us up a little bit. And just particularly given where we're at and the number of cows, steers and heifers that we've had on feed, we have a lot of front-end supply that we're going to have to work through. And that really kind of leads to kind of where we're at in the markets and kind of circling back to high path of will the market be able to recover? And if the futures market will come up to meet the cash.
Why the livestock markets will watch planting progress.
Yeah, so when we think about where we're at on corn plantings, that's just getting underway, and 3 to 5% of that corn is being planted. It really depends on the area, on what's getting planted. But really the big news there is, if we're, in pretty favorable feedstuff conditions, that really supports us being able to hold on cattle a little bit longer than we would have liked to fatten them up. But, as we really have more soybeans that really come to harvest and more acreage that goes to that, then we can start to see a little bit pressure on those prices. I think long-term, the industry needs to consider some of the things that we've been talking about has really been around this sustainable aviation fuel and this move for biofuels. The real push there is for soybeans to be planted and to basically be processed. And so particularly in Nebraska, in the southeast or northeast Nebraska, we tend to plant a lot of corn, tendency to go to high moisture corn. And so if we're eliminating acres to plant soybeans, that's going to have impacts on basis for corn and also just the closeout profitability for feeding. So I think that's not something that's going to impact us in the short run. But as we start to think about strategically, where does this position us and what do we need to be prepared? That's something that's not going away. Sustainable aviation fuel and also this renewable energy fuel and how that affects the crops that we use and feed to put on weight efficiently is going to be something we're going to have to deal with it in the coming years.
Though monthly cattle on feed reports will continue, USDA looking at ending some of these reports.
I think it's really important to know that we use a lot of these reports to generate forecasts, particularly that cattle on or the cattle inventory report that comes out in July. Big number that comes out of is the cow-calf crop. That cow-calf crop may seem minor, but when we talk about stocking intensity or stocking density, we need that type of number in order to calculate that. And particularly some of the stuff that I've put out is we really look at this by state by state. It allows us to see inflows, outflows. That's just one of many reports that USDA is thinking about discontinuing.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Agency for International Development will deploy $1 billion in Commodity Credit Corporation funding to purchase U.S. grown commodities to provide emergency food assistance to people in need throughout the world.
Shane Danielson is with the Foreign Ag Service on details of a global emergency food aid package.
The United States produces more commodities than are consumed and therefore has the opportunity to partner with USAID and extend this food to those in our global community who are struggling. An estimated 205 million people need life-saving food assistance around the world, and some 768 million people are facing chronic hunger. These U.S. commodities will go a long way to strengthening global food security through the provision of nutritious U.S. global commodities. This initial tranche of up to $950 million will support the purchase, shipment, and distribution of U.S. wheat, rice, sorghum, lentils, chickpeas, dry peas, vegetable oil, cornmeal, navy beans, pinto beans, and kidney beans. The 18 countries comprise a number of countries across the African continent. There are also countries included from the Caribbean, as well as the Middle East, and also into Asia.
Speaking of food, could see fewer acres of wheat harvested as more across the southern plains being grazed out. Will that affect prices? Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
In general, though, I think the bigger equation for wheat these days is the weather, and the market's kind of zeroing in on the dryness that's still forecast in the Southwest Plains. The Russian strikes on Ukraine's ports, that could be an element in the marketplace also, although we're kind of getting tired of this news. I hate to say it like that, but I mean, it's just one of those elements that seems to be every day now, or at least every week, and we'll just have to see how that plays out. And then you've also got, you know, pretty large net short positions from some of the spec funds out there, and that could set up the scenario where if they all have to hit the exit at the same time, if they're all short, then that could start to propel the price higher. Other things that are affecting the wheat market is the expectations that wheat conditions in this afternoon's report, the winter wheat conditions, are expected by the trade to be a 1% or 2% decline in the good to excellent category. I guess the thing that would kind of offset any kind of continued rally is the fact that Russian wheat exports in the 23-24 marketing year so far are about 43.6 million metric tons. That's about 5.6 more than last year. And there seems to be plenty of old crop grain still available. So they're a formidable competitor in terms of the quantity and their willingness to sell it. And then ICAR also came out with their estimate for the 23-24 old crop wheat exports. They're putting them at 53 million metric tons versus 52 million metric tons. So again, ample supply in terms of the wheat equation out of Russia. So you got a little bit of both. Now, all that said, one thing I look at are seasonal tendencies. And you can argue the actual underlying fundamentals at any particular time of the year, but there tends to be some sort of rally in the July hard red winter wheat futures between about this time, maybe start actually a couple few days ago, into about the end of the first week in May. So seasonally speaking, there seems to be a normal tendency. There's always going to be some kind of years where it just doesn't work out, but that seems to be a tendency for rally. So maybe that's a bit of what's going on here. Soybeans, on the opposite of that, are looking for or typically see some kind of dive in prices until about mid-May. And corn, kind of mirrors wheat with a bit of a rally between about now and, say, the end of that first week in July. So perhaps some of the seasonal tendency traders out there are also looking at the time of year, circling on their calendars, and they're looking for opportunities to buy, too. So that might be helping the markets up a little bit on the day also.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Our nation's efforts to expand farm and food export market opportunities through the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, as discussed by U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai this week in hearings before House and Senate lawmakers.
Separately, through the USMCA, we are actively championing the interests of our farmers and agricultural producers. We have pursued two cases now against Canada's dairy tariff rate quota allocation measures, and we are currently in the midst of challenging Mexico's restrictive measures on biotech corn before a panel.
Ambassador Tai also acknowledged the importance of building rural economies through increased ag trade opportunities.
Through negotiations, our administration has secured over $21 billion in new agricultural market access in the last 3 years.
Such as increased farm and food exports in markets like India through negotiated tariff eliminations and reductions. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.